right here over WOR. Our next news at 5 with John Scott as we switch to Studio 2 and Bob and Ray.
Okay, thank you, Roger. And hello again, everybody. We start off a brand new week here on the 8th of March, and going to be a big banner week for us, too.
Yes, it is. We've got the big banner up at the back of the studio, and this is March 8th has always been a very good show. We were going through some of our records of past shows. March 8th really stands up.
It really does.
We get...
There goes the banner.
Oh.
That's too bad. I thought it was a little too tight. I just knew it was.
Did you put that up, Webb?
Yes, sir.
What did you attach that with? Thumbtacks or what?
Yes, sir, thumbtacks and some brads.
They just weren't strong enough.
And
the
some
banner.
Pocket nails and a couple
and
of
spikes.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's too heavy for all of those, anyway.
Would you go over to the organ now and play some sweet music for us, Webley?
Thank you.
All right, I will.
We'll give you time to get over there.
That's it. Fine. And kind of smile as you play, will you? Thanks.
Things aren't really as bad as they seem.
Once again, our scouts have been searching the railroad and bus terminals for victims of hard luck who need a helping hand from our generous Bob and Ray organization. Bob, I assume that poor wretch there beside you is our first guest for today.
Yes, sir, Ray, it is. This is Mr. Barney Shemple of Kenosha, Wisconsin. Mr. Shemple, I can't help noticing that you have on knee breeches and a lace shirt and a three-cornered colonial hat. Does it have something to do with the business career you'd hope to carve out for yourself here in New York?
Well, yes, it does. See, I got the idea that a town crier could make a pretty good living in Manhattan. It has a nice historical touch for the bicentennial.
Uh-huh.
And also, a lot of people can't afford to buy a newspaper at today's prices, so I thought that... throw me their small change for going through the streets and yelling out the news.
Well, that seems like a reasonable assumption on your part, but I must be wrong because we only pick failures to be on the show.
Oh, I'm a failure, all right.
You are.
First, I had to shell out $8 to rent this costume,
mm-hmm.
and then I had to buy a newspaper to read about all the stuff a town crier would normally town cry.
Well, it sounds as if you prepared yourself adequately before you failed, right?
Well, yeah, I was really on top of the situation. I started out across East 89th Street, ringing my bell and crying stuff like, Hey, Congressional Committee investigates charges that $60 million in unauthorized military aid was sent to Angola.
That sounds as if it'd be of interest to everybody who lives on East 89th Street, all right?
Well, I didn't just rely on that alone. I tried to throw in something for everyone. For instance, I also town cried, Hear ye, final scores from the National Basketball Association. Milwaukee 113, Portland 106. Chicago, 97. Kansas City, 92. And at the half, Los Angeles, 63. Golden State, 57.
Well, that Los Angeles-Golden State game sounds like an upset in the making, but that didn't get the audience you'd hope for either, I guess, huh?
Well, some people stuck their heads out of the window, but most of them were just yelling at me to shut up.
Uh-huh.
And nobody tossed money at all, just old shoes and empty beer cans and stuff.
Well, it's really truly a story of heartbreak, Mr. Shemple, but we want to cheer you up. Here's a lovely gift from our generous Bob and Ray organization, a hand-stitched leather saddle for your horse from the Fox Hunt Equipment Company of Paterson, New Jersey.
Well, I don't have a horse. I may dress old-fashioned, but I ride a late-model used bicycle.
Okay, we were hoping you'd like it. Now, with our next hard luck story, let's introduce Mrs. Dodie Pruitt of Green River, Wyoming. Understand that your effort to live within your small income has merely brought you to the brink of financial ruin, Ms. Pruitt.
Yes, I think that's well put. You see, my old car finally gave out on me a few months ago. It was a 1916 Waverly Electric. I really couldn't afford to buy a new car, but I had no choice, so I decided to cut the cost as much as I could by coming east to pick up one at the factory.
So that took you to Detroit from your home in Wyoming then, huh?
No, it took me to Waverly, Massachusetts. Whatever gave you the idea that the Waverly Electric was made in Detroit?
I don't know, but I didn't realize it was made in Massachusetts either.
Well, apparently it's not anymore. At least I couldn't find anybody in Waverly who remembered seeing the factory.
Uh-huh.
So, here I am. No car, bus ticket home either. I'm stuck.
That's indeed tragic, ma'am. But we're standing by to help you with this handsome portable shoeshine kit. It's made of real walnut. There's brown and black polish inside, together with all the brushes you'll need.
Well, I don't want this. I wear white tennis shoes.
Don't try to thank us. We're here to help, Miss Pruitt. And a final story today will be told by Mr. Otto Blakely of Pawnee, Oklahoma. If the information on your card is correct, sir, it says you're trying to make a trip to Israel accompanied by a 30-foot maple tree.
Well, that's right. You see, back in the early 50s, some guy came around my neighborhood asking for a donation to plant a tree in Israel.
Uh-huh.
So I gave him $10, and I always pictured what my tree must look like over there as it was growing up. But I found out recently that the guy taking up the collection was a crook, and I never got a tree planted in my name, so now I'm trying to make up for that.
Well, that's certainly commendable, Mr. Blakely. But I guess only you only donated a seedling. Why do you feel obligated to take a 30-foot maple tree to Israel with you now?
Well, that's how big my tree would have been by now if they'd planted it when they were supposed to. Besides, a man my age can't start all over again with a baby tree. I'm 58
well,
years old.
Well, right. I can see how a young tree might be too active for you to handle. So let us help you on your mission. Here's a lovely gift from our generous Bob and Roy organization. Full case of 24 cans of sauerkraut from the Kankakee Krautworks of Kankakee, Illinois.
Well, if that has any connection with all my problems, it escapes me.
I'm just glad we could help, sir. Eat it in good health. And now,
four cans.
Back to Ray at our main anchor desk. That's kind of an abrupt segue there from that sad music to this.
Well, I thought you needed to jazz it up a little.
Yeah.
It was a little sad there with that
fellow
with all the sauerkraut. I thought I'd change the music.
Okay.
Got a different mood.
All right. We better get to our first cluster here, hadn't we?
I would hope so. All right, Webb, that's it. We've had enough organ music to last us now for a few days. Thank you.
Right. Anybody in our studio audience here know what have been the two choices in coffee traditionally up until now?
Hot and cold?
No. Anybody else have a guess?
Let me see.
Well, I'll tell you. Regular and decaffeinated.
Yes,
right?
That's what I was going to say.
Now, there's a coffee on the market that you want to know about called Cava. The only instant coffee that's 90% acid neutralized. Any questions?
Oh, I'm clear now.
Well, maybe you want to know what that means.
No, I understood. Well, I heard you
tell you anyway.
Before.
Oh, means that Cava, because it's acid neutralized, tastes rich, smooth, and never bitter. It's so rich, most people drink Cava black. They don't want to mask Cava's rich, smooth taste with cream and sugar. Great tip for you constant dieters looking for coffee satisfaction without the calories of cream and sugar. Cava not only gives you great smooth taste, it also supplies that morning lift you look for in your coffee. Cava coffee, the great smooth-tasting instant coffee from Borden, 90% acid neutralized. Cava is down on acid, up on taste.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. After spending their first night in Genoa, our friends left the following morning by train for Milan, where we see them now in their suite at the Hotel Raphael. Mary, Harry, Pop, and Calvin are discussing the suite hotel.
Say, Greg is over at the other end of the room making a phone call.
Did you ever see a living room as big as this in any hotel before?
Isn't it? That's huge furniture, the bed. My goodness, look at the size of that.
Oh, this is a ritzy hotel he's booked us into.
Real walk-in closets, too, I'm telling you.
It's kind of a coincidence. It's named the same as the one in Genoa, Raphael.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Hello, calling. Yes.
I hear Greg in there now. He's probably getting in touch with...
He's expecting a call from me.
Getting in touch with the Opera House.
Uh-huh. What? Would you have him call me here?
When are you supposed to open, Harry?
Hotel Raphael.
I don't know. I don't know. He's made all the arrangements. We're just going along with him. Whatever he... What is it, Greg?
He's going to call me back.
Oh, good.
He was on another line.
That was the impresario at the opera, was it?
That's right.
Say, boy, what of you?
What
isn't
a
it?
Big city this is.
Oh, I think, I hope we'll have time to take a tour of the city and see some of the sights.
It wouldn't be worthwhile coming all the way over here if we don't get to take a tour.
No.
When is that opera supposed to start, anyway?
Yeah, when are we supposed to open, Greg?
Well, I gave them two dates. April 2 is one, and a little later in April.
Do you know which opera we're going to appear in? Wouldn't be Così fan tutti, would it?
Gee, I forgot to ask him.
Well, that's something you should ask the impresario next time you call, Mr. Marlowe.
Yes, I'll do that. It could be Il Trittico by Puccini.
Well, that would be good, too. They're all Greek to me. Did you hear that, Barry, huh?
It's all Greek to you.
Well,
that's funny.
We're going to have to do some heavy studying before we take the stage at La Scala, that's for sure.
Am I going to sing, Mr. Marlowe, do you know?
Yeah, do you have plans for Calvin?
I don't know. I don't know what their plans are for you, Calvin. Maybe you'll just be the traditional spear carrier. I don't know.
What's that you've been studying there, Calvin?
This is room service menu.
Oh, good.
Let me see. Anything here that you might like? Vercicelli. Vermicelli. Could have Mazzani.
How about the ziti?
Linguini. The ziti. Tubatini.
What?
Tubatini.
Elzini Pepe. Rigatoni.
I know what that is.
How about Fusilli?
That's one I haven't heard of before.
How about Cavatelli?
How about that?
Yes, how about... Does it have on there Mastrojoli Rigatti?
Let me see. Yeah, it has Mastrojoli Rigatti. Let's call down and have one order of each.
Good idea. So our friends begin to make themselves comfortable at the Hotel Raphael in Milan. Tomorrow they'll take a tour of the local sights, and we'll hear Calvin say,
"Well, why don't you try some of this Tubatini, and then I'll try some of the Mazzani."
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking. Now, the American Federation of Sheep Herders, representing 14,000 lonely people just like yourself, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who's learned to live with misfortune because it offers more companionship than goldfish. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is throwing darts at a picture of Kaiser Wilhelm in the downstairs game room. It's late afternoon, and Mr. Hasselbaugh, director of the small public library in the village, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Red Boiling Springs Public Library Director Hasselbaugh. It was kind of you to rush over here while the library is still open. I hope the children who are there won't get rowdy and raise the roof just because you're not around to watch them.
No, you needn't worry about that, Miss Bessinger. One of the Wallaby sisters is on duty at the checkout desk this afternoon, and it's her job to keep order. I just do the administrative work.
I see. Is that Wanda Wallaby or Wilma Wallaby?
I'm not sure. They're identical twins, and I never know which one's on duty unless I ask.
Well, I'm surprised to hear you say that. I went to school with the Wallaby girls, and I never had a bit of trouble telling them apart. Wilma is the one who carries a blue pencil box. Wanda is the one who falls down when she tries to play hopscotch.
Well, that may have helped you keep them straight when they were children, but now that they're in late middle age, neither one carries a pencil box or plays hopscotch for that matter.
My stars, are the Wallaby girls that old now? It's hard to believe. When I first met them, Wilma was only about 12, and Wanda was 2 or 3 years younger than that.
Well, I don't quite understand how that can be, Miss Bessinger. The two women are twins.
Well, I know that, but I met Wanda 2 or 3 years before I met Wilma. So it's just the way I told you. When I first met them, Wilma was about 12, and Wanda was 2 or 3 years younger than that.
Yes, using that type of logic, I can see how that might be now.
It almost reminds me of a riddle I heard once. A man rode his bicycle home, and yet he walked. Now, that doesn't seem possible either until you know that the name of his dog was Yeti. Do you get it now? A man rode his bicycle home, and yet he walked?
Yes, ma'am, I think I've heard that riddle.
Well, I know a lot more. If you'd care to stay for dinner, we could tell riddles afterward while we're toasting marshmallows over the fireplace.
No, thank you. I couldn't possibly stay to do that. But I don't imagine you call me over here just to tell riddles, anyway.
No, you're right as you can be on that, Red Boiling Springs Public Library Director Hasselborg. I'm terribly upset about this inflammatory new book that just came out, and I'm certainly hoping you won't allow a copy to be put in the library where anybody might walk in and read it.
Well, I don't know what makes you think the book should be banned, Miss Bessinger.
Well, the mere fact that somebody put a copy on my porch and then ran like the dickens proves that it's making people act strangely toward me. I didn't understand the full implication myself until I started to glance through the book and saw my name in there.
Well, I don't quite understand what you're getting at.
The author can't claim that he was referring to another person with the same name either. My address is mentioned in here, too. So I'm definitely the one he's libeling.
Well, I don't think you should assume you were libeled just because your name appears in a book and somebody left a copy of it on your porch and then ran away. You see, what you have here is the new edition of the telephone directory.
Oh, by George. Now, I'll bet that could explain everything, Red Boiling Springs Public Library Director Hasselborg. I do have a telephone, so I guess they might put my name in there without meaning to defame my character at all. I might have realized that the book wasn't some sort of inflammatory expose if I'd started reading it at the beginning instead of the middle. Well, my goodness. This news does make me feel worlds better. It almost makes me feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dust.
Can it be that Edna's freedom from worry about having her name mentioned in a scandalous book may at last enable her to step through the doorway to happiness? Or will it only lead to further heartbreak when she realizes that her phone number is mistakenly listed as being the one for a 24-hour drugstore? Join us for the next episode when Edna may get punchy from hearing bells ring in the gathering dusk. And now it's time to pay another visit to the Bob and Ray Hobby Hut. I see our moderator for that feature, Neil Clummer, has just entered the studio with his guest. And Neil, as most of you know, is the editor of Wasting Time magazine. And in that capacity, he's become known as Mr. Hobby himself. So why don't you just take it from there and go ahead with your interview, Neil.
Thank you very much, Bob. I think we'll have a real interesting session for all the hobbyists that tuned in today, because my guest is Mr. Mulford B. Thaxter of Skokie, Illinois. And he's one of the leaders in his field, which is collecting numbers from places where they ask you to take a number. Right, Mr. Thaxter?
Well, Neil, I'm a little too modest to call myself a leader in the field, so I just say that I have more than 1,200 numbers from places where they ask you to take a number. That's about three times the size of the next largest collection.
Well, then, I'd certainly say that makes you a leader in your field. And I'm sure our audience would like to know how you get started collecting numbers from places where they ask you to take a number.
Well, like so many great things, it was an accident, Neil. One hot summer day about 4 years ago, I took my little boy, Mulford Jr., to an ice cream parlor near our home. He was whimpering pretty loud for an almond fudge cone. So when I saw a thing on the counter that said, "Please take a number to be served," I naturally took a number.
And that was the beginning of your collection, eh?
No, not right away, Neil. You see, I hadn't planned to keep the number because it was one of those big plastic ones that they use over and over again. So all I really wanted was to have my number called, and then I would have gladly given it back to get Mulford Jr. an almond fudge cone.
Well, something must have happened there to turn you from an ordinary consumer into an avid hobbyist. What was it, Mr. Thaxter?
Well, Neil, I guess it was the fact that the number I took was 72, and the next one the clerk called was 56. As I say, it was a hot afternoon. The place was crowded.
And your little boy was whimpering for an ice cream cone?
Yes, and I guess that was the real key to the thing. Mulford Jr. was making such an annoyance of himself that I knew I couldn't wait until they'd served everybody from 56 clear up to 72. So I started to put my plastic card back on the rack and leave. But by that time, some other people had come in and taken numbers. So that made 75 the next card showing on the rack.
And, of course, that presented the problem of whether to put your number back or just take it with you. And so you decided to take it. And that was the beginning of your collection.
Yes, that's right. But how did you know? Have I told you this story before?
No, I just guessed that that might be the ending. But it's still hard to imagine how you'd get 1,200 examples for your collection in such a short length of time.
Well, when you just plan to take a number and then leave with it, that doesn't take nearly as long as taking a number and waiting to be served. Also, I've picked up a lot of specimens from other collectors over the world, like this example here. I got it from a hobbyist in Russia, and it's the prize of my collection.
Yes, I can see how it would be. The Russians seem to make their number tickets out of woven straw. And that number on that one is 2,541, which certainly would indicate that consumers have to wait longer to be served than we do in this country.
Yes, the gentleman who sent me that ticket said it came from an auto showroom. And I guess they have quite a shortage of new cars over there, because he wrote that he'd have to wait about 4 years to be served if he ever took a number to keep for himself.
Well, it's quite interesting when the numbers have stories like that to go with them.
I agree. Like this one here, the oldest one I have, dates back to the time of the Oklahoma land rush. You'll notice it's carved out of wood, and the number on it is 1. I understand that's because it was used in a remote area where the storekeeper only had 2 customers. So he only needed 1 ticket in case he was serving a customer and the other one came in.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, that's a ridiculous story, because you wouldn't need numbers if you never had more than 1 person waiting.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that, but you said my stories were interesting, so I made up another one without stopping to think whether it'd be ridiculous or not.
I understand. And I know our listeners all appreciate your effort to make the collection seem more interesting than it is. So thanks for being with us, sir. And now, to all you folks at home, this is Neil Klummer urging you to have a good day and find a good hobby.
Now more Bob and Ray and Radio New York over WOR New York.
And greetings and the warmest of felicitations, sports fans. This is Biff Burns emanating from Mike's side in the Biff Burns Sports Room, where we hope to spend the next few minutes scrutinizing all the highlights and sidelights from the world of sports. We also have a special guest here in the sports room, the immortal Muddy Pembroke, who spent his illustrious baseball career with the White Sox, the Indians, and the Pirates.
Excuse me, Biff, but in my present line of work, I don't refer to them as the White Sox, the Indians, and the Pirates anymore. They're the Pale Hose, the Tribe, and the Bucks.
I see. Well, that brings up the first of many penetrating questions I want to pose to you, Muddy. Just what is your present line of work?
Well, I'm conducting a class for about 20 big league rookies here in New York, Biff. They all spend 8 to 10 weeks with me before they head south for, we hope, eventually spring training.
They ever do.
And by the time I give them their sheepskins, they'll be able to talk to newspaper reporters in acceptable big league jargon.
In other words, they'll speak in baseball cliches.
Well, I don't believe I'd call them cliches, Biff. It's just a collection of colorful terms that every ball player ought to know before he's interviewed by the press. I teach kids how to talk to reporters without saying anything too definite. For example, I've got one rookie who's going to be with the Halos this coming season.
That would be the California Angels you're speaking of.
That's right. But calling them the Halos makes you sound less like a rookie who's just come up from the minors. Anyway, this young fella is bound to be asked what he thinks about the Halos' chances for picking up all the marbles this year.
Winning the pennant in the American League, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course, the kid knows that his teammates from the Big A are perennial cellar dwellers who don't shape up as contenders for the bunting again this year. Only he can't say that.
No, that would indeed be difficult for a rookie to say, Muddy. So you put so many cliches into that sentence, I'm not sure I could repeat it myself.
Well, Biff, that's not the reason he can't say it. I mean, he can't say it because he's only a first-year man, and it would sound like he's putting the knock on all the Halo veterans.
Uh-huh.
So I teach him how to dodge embarrassing questions like that by speaking in big league jargon.
So when he's asked to apprise the press of the Angels' pennant chances, I suppose he merely says that opposing players put on their pants one leg at a time.
No, I never thought of having him say that, but it's a good, clever comment. No, I must remember to teach that to my class next year.
Well, if I've contributed anything, I'm happy to help, Muddy. But what would you have a rookie say if he were asked to comment on the pennant hopes of a last-place team?
Well, in the case of the Halos, I think his best bet would be to say that the team will be heard from if they can find a solid number 4 man for their starting rotation. You see, that gets the reporter to thinking because the Halos don't have a solid number 2 or a number 3 man either.
In other words, the response just confuses things completely.
That's right. In a case like that, it's also good to say that the team has a good strong arm in the outfield this year And you also look for a little more punch from the bottom half of the hitting order.
Yeah, I can see how both those comments would be good. You've avoided mentioning who has a strong arm in the outfield, and nobody knows what the hitting order will be yet.
Well, that's the idea, Biff. It's always good to say something positive when you're a rookie, but you don't want to look stupid either.
Uh-huh.
So you always speak of infielders who are able to go to their left or go to their right, because every infielder can do that. And the same thing holds true when you talk about a catcher who can come up cleanly with the ball.
All those phrases are certainly all good and evasive, Muddy. I can't understand why only 20 rookies decided to avail themselves of your tutelage this year when there are many more than that in the majors.
Well, to tell you the truth, most baseball people think of me as just a colorful old-timer who now operates on the fringes of the national pastime with a lot of the old pepper.
In other words, they think you're nutty as a fruitcake.
Yeah, that's what they seem to think, Biff.
Well, we have no intention of taking issue with the opinions of the majority, Muddy, but thanks for dropping by with us today. And this is Biff Burns saying, until next time we get together in the sports room, this is Biff Burns saying so long, fans.
And now the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we see strange characters standing on the sidewalk. Other times we drive down streets that don't have any sidewalks. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, it was cold in Los Angeles. I just pulled over to the curb and shut off the engine when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said,
"Would you mind turning the engine back on, Sam? The heater goes off when you turn the engine off, and it's cold tonight in Los Angeles."
"I don't think it's a good idea to sit here parked with the engine running, Ralph R. Jr. Always a danger of carbon monoxide when you sit parked with the engine running."
"Well, I thought that was only dangerous in a closed-in space, Sam, you know, like a garage."
"Well, I don't think so, Ralph R. Jr. No reason why a person would want to keep the heater going in a closed garage. Never gets cold enough in there."
"In Los Angeles, you mean?"
"That's right. Never gets cold enough to keep the heater going in a closed garage in Los Angeles."
"I guess that would explain it, Sam. I sure am cold, but then, as you say, we're not inside a closed garage."
"That's right. We're inside a closed
garage." "Calling car 119. Car 119. Check on reports of a prowler in the yard at 3477 North Santa Barbara Avenue. That's a prowler. 3477 North Santa Barbara, 119.
3477 North Santa Barbara, huh?"
"That's us, Sam. Let's roll."
"I don't think I can, Ralph R. Jr. I can't see to back up to get out of this space because the cold air has made the rear window steam up."
"Couldn't we just get out and wipe off the rear window so you can see what you're backing into, Sam?"
"I don't think getting out to wipe off the rear window would do any good, Ralph R. Jr. It steamed up from the inside, not the outside."
"Well, how can you tell that from here, Sam? You can tell it's steamed up, but you can't see whether it's the inside or outside, not from here."
"I don't have to see to tell it's on the inside. That's just the way it would naturally steam up. I learned that in high school science class."
"Well, how could you learn a thing like that in high school science class, Sam? This squad car wasn't even made when you were in high school."
"Yeah, that's true, but the principle is there just the same."
"Car 119, car 119, disregard that call to check on a prowler in the yard at 3477 North Santa Barbara. The case has been handled by the man of Squad Car 62. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial."
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's case, here's a timely shopping tip from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Friends, do you realize that Easter is less than 2 months away? Well, that's true. So isn't it about time you started shopping for some brightly colored spring flypaper to go on your Easter bonnet? As I'm sure you're aware, flies have difficulty telling the artificial fruit and flowers on ladies' hats from the real thing. And you certainly don't want to be embarrassed by having insects swarm around your head as you attend services at the church of your choice on Easter Sunday. So better act now while ample supplies of yellow, orange, and pink flypaper remain for the coming spring season. But remember, the latest fashion shades are available only in genuine Einbinder flypaper, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
The suspect in that prowler case on North Santa Barbara was convicted on one count of trespassing and one count of trespassing with criminal intent to prowl. He's now serving a term of 30 days to life in the state correctional institution at Soledad.
So another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night. Rockman Corporation, maker of fine buggy whips for more than nine centuries, brings you The Orderlies, a dramatic behind-the-scenes glimpse of life in a big city hospital.
Orderly Wine Coop, report at once to Chief Orderly Snellwell. Report to Chief Orderly Snellwell.
You beckon me, Chief Orderly Snellwell?
I certainly did, Wine Coop. But if memory serves me correctly, that was almost 9 seconds ago. Do you have any idea what happens to orderlies whose inability to move quickly prevents them from performing duties in a big city hospital?
Oh, I sure do, Chief Orderly Snowell. I've seen more than one old-timer thrown out of the back door clutching his bad conduct discharge. But I'm in top shape, sir. It's just that I was clear down in the basement filling out a requisition for a new mop.
I thought I commanded you to take care of personal business on your own time, Winecoop.
Well, I didn't exactly figure that getting a new mop was personal business. Besides, it takes almost 3 hours to fill out all the requisition forms and show just cause why you should get a mop.
And you have some objection to putting in a few off-duty hours to obtain the finest equipment that money can buy, is that it, Winecoop?
Well, now that orderlies have to buy their own mops, I guess I did harbor a little resentment against the system, but that doesn't detract from my personal devotion to you in any way, Excellency.
Stop kissing my shoes, Winecoop. That won't save you this time. You've been called here to face a very serious charge. I'm sure you're aware that every patient being released is required to ride to the front door of the building in a wheelchair.
Oh, yes, sir, and I enjoy performing that function. Sometimes the patients are so glad to get out that they even tip me a dime for wheeling them to the door. Of course, I always put the money in the relief fund for old, worn-out orderlies.
Normally, I'd construe that as a commendable gesture, Winecoop, but it certainly doesn't explain away the fact that you allowed the woman in 433 to walk out of here yesterday without wheelchair assistance.
But that woman wasn't a patient, Chief Orderly Snellwell. She just came to pick up her little boy who had his tonsils out. Naturally, I forced him to stay in a wheelchair every inch of the way.
And I suppose the little fellow paid his own hospital bill, right?
No, sir. His mother did that. He was only seven. Oh, gosh, I'm suddenly aware of my ghastly blunder. We only wheel patients to the door to make sure they stop at the cashier's window on the way out and pay up in full. But in this case, it wasn't the sick person who was buying his own freedom.
So you're finally seeing the light, Winecoop. Of course, by now, that woman and child could be hundreds of miles away from here. And it's just pure luck that she was honest enough to pay the bill without going through our usual enforcement procedures.
Well, I just don't know what to say, Chief Orderly Snellwell. When I went to 433 with a wheelchair, I noticed that the little kid was still feeling rocky, but the woman was strong as an ox. So I did the humane thing without stopping to think which one of them had the checkbook.
The humane thing, Winecoop? It's humane to risk a $658 non-payment?
Oh, no, sir. I see now what a silly little fool I've been. For a fleeting moment, I forgot to keep the hospital's financial success uppermost in my mind. I guess I deserve the worst thing you can think of to do to me, Chief Orderly Snellwell.
Oh, there, Winecoop. We did get the money in this case, and that's what really counts. However, we're ready now to release that wrestler in 519 this morning, and I hear he's threatened to wrap a wheelchair around any orderly's neck who tries to make him ride in it.
Oh, allow me to redeem myself by volunteering for the job, Chief Orderly Snellwell. I'll get that big bully into the chair, even if it means laying down my own life in the struggle.
Now you're speaking with the heartless dedication of a true career orderly, Winecoop. It almost makes me proud to call you a colleague.
And so, with high resolve, low intelligence, the hospital orderly carries out his noble mission to make medical science more profitable. Join us again soon when the Rockman Corporation, maker of fine buggy whips for more than nine centuries, will present another thrilling drama of the orderlies.
And now welcome to the first installment of Small Town Editor, the story of Halsey Parley, fighting editor of the Call City Clarion, and his apprentice, Eager J. Moffle, who assists his courageous editor in the never-ending fight against local corruption.
Well, Jay, how do you like today's editorial?
Oh, I think you're going way out on a limb, Mr. Parley. Mayor Sleeks isn't going to take this sitting down.
and he's our only advertiser.
Son, I never told you this, so I'll tell you now. Joseph Pulitzer once passed through Call City. I'd like to tell you a story about him.
What's the story?
Well, that's about it. He passed through the town, and I covered his passing. It was quite a story. I used the number 3 stencil for the headline that day.
My father told me that you used the number 3 stencil only one time before that, when the Leviathan was being towed to the junkyard here in Call City.
Only your father would remember a thing like that. He was a good copy boy, the most courageous man I ever knew. If there'd been more men like him in the newspaper game, none of us would be here today. That's how courageous he was.
I know. Mom told me he'd print anything.
That's right. And you got the same look about you, boy. I think you'll do. Yes, sir. I think you'll do. Now, hand me that pile of type laying on the table over there.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. You've got a lot to learn. Your father was the same way, gentle, but clumsy as an ox. Use your hands, boy. Use your hands on a thing like that.
I'm sorry, sir. I can't seem to get the hang of picking up things off the table.
Well, it takes time, boy. You'll get it after a while. Now, bring over a copy of today's edition of the Clarion. I want to look it over for neatness.
Yes, sir.
Don't apologize, boy. Your father did the same thing after he'd worked here for 10 years. It's a tricky thing to pick up a piece of paper without tearing it.
Maybe I'm not cut out for this sort of work.
Of course you're not, but we'll work something out.
I'll get it.
Watch the doorknob, boy. It goes left and right, not in and out.
Farley, you'll suffer for this editorial about me.
I went easy on you, Mayor Slinks. I could have blown you and your one-man office sky high.
Oh, really? Just how much do you know?
Well, you want to talk about the reservoir deal as a starter?
You're just bluffing, Farley. I'm clean on that deal.
Sure. And how about the Grange Hall deal? How about the disappearing orphanages deal?
You don't have any proof on all that.
Oh, no? Jay, look on top of my desk. You'll find a paper with names and dates on it. Bring it here.
Yes, sir.
Well, that disposes of the evidence. You know, Jay, you're a lot like your father. And as for you, Mayor Slakes, I'm going right on with my courageous editorials against you, and I won't stop until I run out of paper.
So be with us again soon when fighting editor Halsey Parley and eager Jay Moffle look for fresh evidence in their fight against the mayor and corruption.
The makers of Tingle, the wintergreen flavored Devil Floss, invite you to join us for another exciting adventure of Elmer W. Litzinger, Spy.
My name is Elmer W. Litzinger, Spy. Into my lap fall some of the toughest espionage assignments that our government encounters. Just a few weeks ago, we had a report that one of our scientists had discovered a foolproof triggering device for setting off the hydrogen bomb. It was my job to pick up the plans. I was to meet the scientist in a small restaurant.
Now, what'll it be, Mac?
Just coffee.
Cup of Java.
You're a stranger around here, aren't you?
That's right. I'm Elmer W. Litzinger, Spy.
I'm pleased to meet you. I'm Fred C. Wharton, Fry Cook. What brings you here?
Well, I'm here on a special mission for our government. One of the scientists here has invented a new triggering device for the hydrogen bomb, and I've come to pick up the plans.
That's so, a new triggering device, you say?
You seem very interested.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested in all kinds of stuff like that.
Perhaps you'd like to see the secret document I brought with me from Washington. It shows the complete cross-section of the bomb, except for the triggering device.
Ah, you mind if I make a copy of this document here in my notebook?
Not at all. But here, why don't you use my photostatic camera here? You'll be sure of getting an accurate copy that way.
Oh, much obliged.
You can probably get the film developed at the drugstore.
No, I have a place where I send things like this undeveloped. There's some people I work for who prefer it that way.
Well, you can suit yourself about that.
I guess they're making quite a few of these bombs out here now.
Well, they told me at the Pentagon just before I left that they have a stockpile of about 200 of them here now.
200, huh? Let's see. I want to make a note of that before I forget it.
Well, I shouldn't be babbling on like this. You probably have other customers to wait on.
Oh, that's all right. I'm really more interested in what you're talking about here.
I have figures here on our nuclear weapon stockpiles at other bases around the country, but I hate to bore you with a lot of statistics.
I like figures. Oak Ridge, May 75, March Air Force Base, 150.
Incidentally, the man I'm supposed to meet here is a Dr. Ignatius Plitwell. Do you know him?
Yes. Some friends of mine had a business appointment with him night before last. I think you'll find his body stuffed into a culvert about 8 miles west of town on the main highway.
Well, I don't want to go all the way out there to see him, then. I think I'll just mail back my report saying, case closed successfully by Alma W. Litzinger, spy.
The kind of smile that starts on your lips and spreads till it takes over your whole body. It's the smile you feel in Jamaica and on board our airline, Air Jamaica. Come with us. You'll find yourself smiling on beaches and at blue mountains, smiling at underwater fish, and smiling back at smiling people. Air Jamaica has special low fares, holiday packages, and more flights a week to Jamaica than anyone else. Call your travel agent and let us make your life a holiday.
Air Jamaica has 3 flights a day to sun-warm Jamaica. Call your travel agent.
And today we received a new selection of Flanagan and Allen records done some years back. Let's have a preview of one of them.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I think of her wherever I go. I get a funny feeling inside of me just walking up and down. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner
because I'm a Londoner.
All right, Dale. And let's go to George Meade, shall we?
All right. Oh, where does the time go? Thank you, Stan. That does it for sports, and it does it for Bob and Ray for this Monday.
It's been a very fast 3 hours, and it'll be the same tomorrow, we hope, beginning at 4:15.
So until then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
And this is WOR New York, an RKO General Station.